You're with SBS Radio.
One of the first things to recognise is that Western science is actually a deeply cultural construct. We project Western science and Western way of thinking as if they're culture neutral, as if they're unquestionable and objective, but really it's a very specific cultural way of making sense of the world. And in this way of making sense of the world stems back to the Enlightenment period in the 1700s, where we had the birth of humanism and Western science that separated people out from what was perceived as being nature. Now, you know, you and I are both breathing and drinking water. We're not actually separate to nature. You know, all cultures are trying to make sense of the world, and that's one way in which white culture or Western culture is one of the analogies and metaphors that gets used. So understanding that Western science is a cultural construct is important, and that way of thinking has led to an environmental crisis because it separates people out from place. It enables people to think about nature and ecology not as part of who we are as people, rather as a resource that can be managed. You know, we look at the climate crisis that we're in right now, we look at the decisions being made by government about Adani, and that doesn't really recognise the way in which humans are integrally a part of place. So there's all sorts of wonderful things that have come from Western science, but it is limited in its ability to address this ecological crisis, partly because of the worldview it's founded on. So engaging with Indigenous knowledges through Indigenous nations, through sovereign relationships, is a really great way of integrating these ideas of reciprocity, of relationships, of connections. Many Aboriginal people talk about caring as part of country. It tends to be a worldview that's based on recognising those relationships, and that's desperately what we need in an environmental crisis that we're in.
Yeah. Is there an example of where there's actually a partnership that's working in Australia of engagement with First Nations people in managing country?
Yes, there is. So in the paper, we use three different case studies. Two of them are international, but one is from here in South Australia. So the Ngurrindjeri Nation, so one of my colleagues is a Ngurrindjeri Nation citizen. So the Ngurrindjeri country is the bottom of the Murray River, the Lower Lakes and the Murray Mouth. And the Ngurrindjeri were able to negotiate a platform that's kind of a de facto sovereignty. It was called the Kungun Ngurrindjeri Yunnan Agreements, Listen to Ngurrindjeri Speaking. So those agreements were developed in 2009 based on contract law and gave Ngurrindjeri a platform of sovereignty that they could engage with and negotiate on with the state using Ngurrindjeri decision-making for their work. So those Kungun Ngurrindjeri Yunnan Agreements have been really fundamental to shifting some of the practices that have happened in that area working with Ngurrindjeri. So, for instance, there were some changes in the ways in which the river management was done during the Millennium Drought based on Ngurrindjeri worldviews and ideas. They shifted some of the policy platforms and negotiated to get temporary structures put in the river. And also Ngurrindjeri have been working in a range of planning and management approaches to integrate Indigenous worldviews into the management plans. So typically, environmental organisations and managers would develop a natural resource management plan and maybe at best put in a chapter of Indigenous ideas at the end without really recognising what I was saying before about the cultural construct of Western science. So the Ngurrindjeri Nation, through their platform of the KNY, have been negotiating new ways of doing management plans that integrate Indigenous worldviews throughout, so that Indigenous ideas aren't stuck in a chapter at the end, but they're shifting the vision and the ways in which the work is done. So, for instance, in the Sugar Shack Wetland Management Plan on Murrindji, which is the Ngurrindjeri name for the Murray River, those plans have been reshaped according to Ngurrindjeri worldviews and ideas. The modelling has shifted to enable those ideas to be different. So rather than looking at species that are perhaps dying in the area or that traditional Western approach to NRM, those plans looked at hindcasting, which was a new technique, but that was used to try and reach the Ngurrindjeri vision of seeing land how the ancestors would have seen it. So it shifted what was trying to be achieved and shifted the methods for doing that and came out in a more sustainable mechanism. So the Ngurrindjeri have been recognised for their work in that area with getting an Australian River Prize in 2015, which is a really prestigious award.
Yeah, it's a form of sovereignty, actually, that they acquired through this partnership with South Australia.
And yes, absolutely.
Yeah, one powerful quote from your report, I can see. You said that environmental practices are determined by who has the power to make decisions.
Absolutely, yeah. So I heard someone mention the other day something that Australia is a great multicultural society, but if we look at the way in which our systems of governance work, it's really monocultural. We still have a system where, you know, the government institutions are mainly populated by white men, and decisions are made in those institutions that affect all Australians. And the environmental management is no exception. So this paper and these ideas cut to the heart about who is making these decisions and in what worldview are these decisions being made, and what needs to change about that to recognise diversity, to recognise alternative ways of doing things that can actually foster the changes we need in an ecological crisis.
Yeah. Well, when we speak about actually First Nations engagement with country, there's always a spiritual element to it. And this in Western science seems to be not acknowledged. And even when the scientific reports are presented to us, although they stem from a Judeo-Christian background, when a scientific paper is released, we tend to remove the spiritual aspect from those papers.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're spot on. Yeah. So Western science, like I said, is a cultural construct that stems from religious beliefs too. So it's all come from a period in Europe during a time of Judeo-Christian. So the idea in the book of Genesis that God gave dominion over, you know, the world to man, yeah, is a philosophical, spiritual, religious belief. And that has been fundamental to the kinds of cultural thinking that underpin Western NRM. And what Western NRM does really well is reduce things to its component parts. I'm sure we've all heard of the taxonomic system where you've got the, you know, plants or animals and things get reduced down, and we can make fantastic sense of, you know, individual species of trees. But what Western knowledge doesn't do very well, Western approaches, is integrate those back together. So we see that we have systems, we have a Department of Education is separate to the Department for Environment, is separate to Department of Health, when all those things are interrelated, as is spirituality, as you point out. So Western science likes to pretend that these things are all separate and that we can make sense of them separately. But that's how we end up in an ecological crisis, because we have all the science in the world. We have 11,000 scientists that have just signed a petition about climate change. But because we separate the science out from the politics and the economics, we find ourselves in a position with no political or economic will. So this is why we need worldviews that can bring all those things together, see those connections, and make some shifts in those ways.
Yeah, and finally, because I know you have to go back to some academic work, just to wrap up, what are the key recommendations that you outline in this paper?
Yeah, well, it's an academic paper, so it's partly about challenging people to think differently. And part of that challenge is to recognise environmental management can be seen as a form of colonialism, and that the very ideas that colonialism has practised, you know, the superiority of white people to all other people, the superiority of people to nature, those are the same ideas that have got us into this environmental crisis, and also marginalised Indigenous worldviews. So helping people understand that environmental management is a form of colonialism and is often felt like that, and that to address issues of environmental management, desperately need Indigenous worldviews and ways of thinking and ways of being and engaging in the world to enhance that. But importantly, that needs to be done by employing and resourcing and recognising Indigenous sovereignty and recognising Indigenous people as rights holders in this country that have a sovereign right to care as part of country and need to collaborate alongside on an equitable basis with the Western science in achieving these things.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.